We're now going to switch gears, in some senses, but in some senses not. We have with us once again here in the studio retired Major Police Major Neil Franklin, Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP, a 32-year police veteran of three different police forces, where he ran training in the undercover narcotics investigations and some of the largest narcotics arrests and others in our history, who now is flying a different flag, or a flag that he's learned to fly because of his experiences. Neil Franklin, good to have you back in the studio.
Mark, glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
410-319-8888 is the number. Please join us here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. So this has not gotten much attention because of what's happening with Syria. But talk about let's explore these hearings that Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont had in the U.S. Senate. Talk about it. What happened?
Yeah, it was a hearing where he wanted to address marijuana policy in this country. And the recent memo, we refer to it as the Cole memo, from the Department of Justice that came out under Eric Holder's office. And pretty much what it was a directive to the U.S. attorneys around the country of outlining the eight areas of enforcement that the federal government is going to pay attention to as relates to states like Washington State and Colorado, which have recently legalized marijuana for recreational use. Many people thought that the federal government was going to file a lawsuit, an injunction, preventing this law from going forward in those two states to legalize marijuana. But he didn't. He didn't. What the administration did was says, okay, we're going to let you move forward because obviously the people want to do something different. And we're not going, even though it's still against federal law, and he made that clear, even though it's still against federal law, we're going to outline eight areas of priority that the federal government, with their limited resources, is going to focus on. And so that's what the hearing was about. To talk a little bit more about that, what does it mean? Who's supporting it? Why is there still opposition against it, which is very small, by the way? So basically to clear the air and let people speak about this. He even had the Deputy Attorney General Cole there to speak. Senator Grassley was there. Senator Whitehouse was there, and so it was lightly attended because of the Syria. And there was this wonderful sheriff there from the largest county population-wise in Washington State, King County, which surrounds Seattle.
Oh, right.
Sheriff Ugelhart, he was there to testify also.
About what effect the law had had since it was passed?
The
legalization law?
Well, it really hasn't gone into full effect yet. That won't be till January as they continue to refine the policy from the perspective of their alcohol control board. The liquor control board is going to be the one for the ones who really regulate marijuana in Washington State. But what he was there to talk about was his perspective as a law enforcement leader, you know, one of the largest counties in Washington State, population-wise, and what his thoughts were. And, you know, at the end of the day, what he said was, you know, the people decided they wanted to do something different. And if you have a second, I'd really like to just read a quick paragraph important. Now, this is a 37-year law enforcement veteran who's now the sheriff of this particular county, and he's done everything, he said.
A huge suburban county, including surrounds Seattle.
Absolutely. He's done everything. Right. Now, here's what he said. One of the things he said, quote, he says, "I was a strong supporter of Initiative 502 last year, and I remain a strong supporter today. There are several reasons for that support. Most of all, I support 502 because that's what the people want. They voted for legalized marijuana." He says, "We, the government, have failed the people. And now they want to try something else. Too often the attitude is, we're the cops, you're not, don't tell us how to do our job. That's the wrong attitude." And he says, "I refuse to fall into that trap." So he is truly a servant of the people. And that's one of the things law enforcement has gotten away from, being servants of the people.
Now, why do you think that is? I mean, what... We talked about this before many times. How you get back to the sense that the police are supposed to be one with the people, not abusive towards the people. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that. Look, there's so many policemen, as you and many people I know. My nephew's a cop. You know that are just lovely human beings and trying to do the right thing. But something larger in the culture
Right.
It's changed.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the laws that we are now charged with enforcing, like these drug laws. You know, they're laws that actually put us against the people. They create a us versus them situation and mentality. And it's laws that are in many ways very difficult and unable to enforce. August Vollmer, who was one of the early police leaders in this country, backed on alcohol prohibition. And during the beginning of when we started with our drug policies and down this road of drug prohibition, he was also one of the first leaders, head of the International Chiefs of Police Association. You know, and he made this comment also that, you know, when we have laws such as these that enforce alcohol prohibition and such as these, and he even mentioned the ones of drug prohibition as well, you know, we have laws that are counterproductive to public safety. You know, we drive this business underground, creating these large criminal enterprises that are violent. But then he also speaks to those who are addicted, you know, to these drugs and how this and how it's a bad idea to venture down a road which should be one covered by health, but to put it in the criminal justice realm. And before you know it, we're at odds with many of our citizens. And that's where we are today.
So I'm curious, and folks, please join us here at 410-319-8888 and weigh in about your thoughts on the legalization of marijuana. We'll stick with that today. We'll talk about other drugs if you'd like. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number here. What are your thoughts? I mean, I think that, you know, we talked the other day just about if you change one word in the Substance Abuse Act nationally could change the entire approach towards marijuana. What was that you were saying?
Yeah, what it was, there's a bill, HB, on Capitol Hill now, HB 1523. And basically it's one sentence that removes marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act of the 1960s. And in doing so, that will permit every state in this union to move forward with their own drug policy. Now, if they want to continue to prohibit it, that's fine, as they currently do in some counties across this country with alcohol. But the bottom line, it'd leave it up to those people in those individual states to decide what's going to work best for them, and that's where it should be.
You think it should be for the states to decide?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, if a smaller jurisdiction, for instance, if Maryland moves to legalize marijuana, but yet Montgomery County decides they want to keep it prohibited, they can do that. Personally, I don't think it's a good idea. It creates all sorts of problems, but they would have the ability to do that, right? You know, and Maryland did have a bill in last year. It was introduced. I think Kurt Anderson was on it.
Delegate Kurt Anderson.
And a couple other folks to do just that. What we should at least do in this state, our leaders in Annapolis, what they should at least do is put it out to the people to decide.
On a referendum.
And let the people decide what's going to work best for them and their community. I mean, that's what this country is all about, isn't it? That's one way to ensure that our representatives represent us and what we want.
And just stop all the kind of arrests and putting people. There are people who languish in Baltimore City Jail, let's say, for 60 days waiting for a trial on a bag of marijuana. There are people doing time in prison for marijuana. And especially if you're a young man of color, you can get pulled up. You might be holding a little marijuana. You get busted. And again, it becomes an issue of race, unfortunately, in some ways, because even though there are numerically and even percentage-wise more young white kids and white people smoking marijuana, they're not the ones getting arrested.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But our policing policies and practices and where we enforce these policies, that's why we end up with so many mainly young black men in prison for drug possession and other things.
Let's go to the phones. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Would you like to see marijuana legalized in this country? Should it be taken out of the Control Act.
Yeah, Control Act.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Donovan, you're on the air.
Yes, I think they should legalize marijuana. For the simple fact is, I'm an ex-marijuana smoker, but I think I never smoked marijuana. You know, when it's like when you have an issue like how it is now, I think once you legalize it, I think you have less people smoking.
Less what? What'd you say? Less what, Donovan?
If they legalized, I think you'd have less people smoking it. But I think people go against it, like young kids, for the challenge, like they cannot do it. Or, you know.
Right.
But that's what it was when I started smoking. Or you can't smoke it. So I said, well, you know, so I think that it is for a lot of kids, a lot of, you know, grown folks. That's, you know, I think that it is if you legalize it.
That's,
it would stop a lot of people, and it would help a lot of, you know, the crimes, I think. You know.
That's a very powerful point.
Well, it definitely would. Those two things that Donovan mentioned, there is some data when you look at what's happened in other countries, and I know people say, well, the United States, we're not other countries. But basically trends are trends. When they move in a particular direction to legalize or to at least decriminalize marijuana, they have seen a reduction in use, like in Portugal, mainly among young people, because it's no longer exciting anymore. It's no longer that rebellious thing to do. It's what old people do, you know, and it's true. And that's some of the comments of the kids in the Netherlands, too, is, hey, that's what old people do in coffee shops. We don't want anything to do with that. And what Donovan also said about crime, marijuana continues to be the number one drug being sold by our gangs and the cartel. You know, we continue to put billions of dollars into the hands of these gangs and the cartel, which then go and are used to start up other criminal enterprises and support other criminal enterprises such as human trafficking and others.
This is important. I want to bring up an issue before we go about the difference between legalization and decriminalization.
It's
a very
it's
powerful
important.
Difference here. Let me go to the phones first at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the legalization of marijuana in our, let's just start with our state, and AK at UMBC. You're on the air.
I smoke marijuana most of the time. I'm a college kid. I don't really see anything wrong with it. I mean, I know a lot of people that smoke too. I just see that most of the time, if you're driving, maybe late at night, you go by a relo to roll up. Cops follow and they pull you over. And even if you didn't do anything, they're still gonna search your car no matter what. So it depends on if you're lucky or not. Because if you get caught, you already know you're getting arrested. But I really don't think some smoking a herb or smoking a weed should get you arrested or going to prison just for smoking. Drinking was illegal before, but people still did it. I think the same treatment of smoking should be treated the same way.
Yeah.
AK, thanks for your call. I think you raised a couple of important points
there.
Yeah,
AK, I mean, we're still arresting over 700,000 people every year in this country for marijuana possession. I'm not talking about distribution, moving tons of it across the country. I'm talking about for simple possession, over 700,000 people. And that arrest alone will cause them problems for the rest of their lives. So, you know, what he said about searching, you know, again, imagine if we didn't have these laws that promote that sort of interaction with police and citizens, that every time the police stop a car or even stop someone on the street, the first thing that they're thinking about is, how can I search this person or how can I search this car to find drugs? You know, imagine if we didn't have that, and imagine if police were spending the majority of their time, which is very, very limited, on murder, rape, domestic violence, robberies, crimes against our children. So many crimes against our children go uninvestigated, unresolved.
Yes,
and that's where we should be concentrating our resources, and on things like human trafficking.
Right.
You know?
I mean, if you can imagine what you just said a minute ago, though, it really struck me, Neil. I mean, because we don't really understand, and we're being understand this program because we've been doing shows covering it, the numbers and depth of child abuse and physical and sexual abuse of children in our society. It's really huge. And it's happening in neighborhoods of every class, every ethnicity in great numbers. And because we don't have the money to invest in stopping it, educating people away from it, counseling and even arresting people, we haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg. And it's a huge problem in this country.
Right. Huge. But that's where policing should be, with the limited resources that we have. That is where we should be, not in enforcing drug laws, not in enforcing something that should be centered in health. But yet we're criminalizing people who have addictions And it still boggles my mind that we treat someone who's suffering from alcohol addiction differently than someone who's suffering from heroin addiction.
So I want to raise this issue, the difference between, people hear both these terms all the time, decriminalization and legalization.
Right.
That's a huge difference.
Huge difference.
And their effects.
There's a lot of focus now on, hey, let's decriminalize. Decriminalization is the way to go. It's the way to go. But to decriminalize, that means we are removing criminal penalties from someone possessing a drug for personal use, a small quantity for personal use. They're not selling it. They're not transporting it to be sold. Or they're not manufacturing it. But that does nothing to eliminate the drug markets on our street corners and the shootings that occur among these gangs who are competing for market share. It does nothing to handle the quality of the drugs that are being that's out there in our community. So you don't know what they're mixed with. You don't know how potent they are and how dangerous they really are. And a number of other problems that come with that. Legalization is basically, the best way I can explain is like, look at alcohol and cigarettes and other products that we sell, even milk and meats. You know, there are quality control standards. It's legal to sell it. You get a license. You know, you jump through a certain number of hoops to make sure you're selling the best possible product that's going to be as safe as possible for the people who decide to use. Age restrictions, you know, you put it behind a counter. Basically, you take it from the street corner, you put it behind a counter where someone's got to show ID to prove they're of age to buy it. Those are the differences between the two. And let me point out to people that I don't think there might be one or two of your listeners that think that alcohol prohibition was a good thing back in the 1920s, but I think you'll find that most people are glad we ended alcohol prohibition because we got rid of Al Capone and all his nonsense and all those murder rate plummeted immediately after we ended it in 1933. Yeah, alcohol use is problematic, but prohibition is much worse. Now, I just wanted to say that because decriminalization is alcohol prohibition. See, it was illegal only to manufacture, transport, and sell alcohol. It wasn't illegal to use. So it was basically decriminalized alcohol. So that's why, you know, we've got to do legalization.
And part of this is if we really want to get a handle on the violence in our communities, because the vast majority of violence is drug dealing related.
By far. Drug dealing related and controlling that marketplace.
And decriminalization will not get rid of that, only legalization.
It won't touch it. Won't touch it at all.
That's a very critical point, because we're talking about the police can't put their hands around the violence in communities like Baltimore City and Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia and everywhere else. That's the bottom line.
So
that's
the police are still going to be wasting their limited resources dealing with this drug situation in our nation. And so if you really want to do it, let's do it right. Come up with a model of regulation and control, which is going to be different for each and every one of these drugs. That's how we solve this issue. At least that's how we begin to move forward. It's not a panacea, but it's where we have to begin. And then we do all the other things we need to do in community regarding health and education and housing, the homeless, you name it. And then we start moving forward better from there.
Retired Major Neil Franklin, Executive Director of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a 33-year police veteran, joins us on a regular basis to talk about legalization issues and drugs, both in terms of the commentary programs like we've done today and in debates and conversations with others around this issue to keep this on the front burner for us here in the state of Maryland and around the country. Neil Franklin, great to see you again. Thank you so much for being with us.
Mark, pleasure to be here.
Good to have you here. On our way to this break, I wanted to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com. Or you can jump on to steinershow.org, click on their banner. Remember, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. We'll be right back as we switch gears and look at a really interesting conference coming to Enoch Pratt Monday night around housing and the right to housing. Stay with us. We'll be right back.